This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This fall, New Hampshire Public Radio unveiled a new podcast called Bear Brook. It details a gruesome cold case starting with some barrels discovered in Bear Brook State Park in Allenstown, New Hampshire in 1985 and 2000. Inside were the remains of four murder victims. Their identities remain unknown. Bear Brook starts there and unspools a story that crisscrosses the nation and envelops other murders, families, and lives. But here's where Bear Brook diverges from many other true crime podcasts. It also talks about some remarkable technology that's been used in this case that's changing the way murders are investigated from now on. Here to talk to us about the podcast and the way genetic advances have played a role in this case is its creator and host, NHPR reporter Jason Moon. Jason, it's nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having me on.
And congratulations on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
I don't want to give anything away for people who are still planning to listen, but I do want listeners to have a sense of what it is you've been researching and reporting on for more than 3 years now. So can you give us the broad strokes of this case?
Yeah, well, I think you did a pretty good job there in the intro. It is about a decades-old unsolved quadruple murder case from here in New Hampshire. The first bodies were discovered in the 1980s, and since then, we still do not know who these people are. But along the way, it has gone in so many interesting directions, including pushing the boundaries of forensic science in a couple of important ways, both with respect to isotope testing, which is a really remarkable way of looking at the chemical composition of human bones and hair and learning all sorts of things about the environments where they lived. And also, more recently, with genetic genealogy, this technique that can allow people to learn your identity through very distant relatives of yours that may have put their DNA online.
Is that what hooked you on this story? I mean, you've been reporting this for 3+ years. It was like 2015 when you went to the first press conference, right?
Yeah, that was something that kept me interested. I mean, when I first came across the story, I was by no stretch a crime reporter. I was covering education for the station at that point. I just happened to sort of be the reporter in the room at the time when this press conference was announced, so it was assigned to me. And, you know, the facts of the case itself were compelling. You know, it's hard not to wonder what happens when basically a whole family is murdered and no one knows who they are for all these years. That was interesting enough in itself, but at that first press conference, they were describing some of the techniques and what they were able to learn just by looking at oxygen atoms in the bones of the victims. I remember leaving that press conference and with this sense of like, wow, they can do that. And from there, that sort of, you know, kept my interest and drove the reporting. And little did I know that there was going to be some really big breaks in the case after I started reporting on it, and a whole new forensic technique that I didn't know anything about at that point. So it's been a interesting journey that has sort of unspooled as I've reported on it.
You mentioned that one of the really fascinating things that you talk about in this series is how law enforcement is able to trace where a person has been. I mean, even these murder victims, even within the last couple of months, where they likely grew up, where they've been in the last few months before their death, and it's through hair and isotope testing. But the other part of this that I want to spend a little time talking about is genetic genealogy and how that's coming into play. Now, police have used DNA for a long time to tie criminals to their crimes, but this is different. Can you describe it?
Yeah, it is different. And it's something that I really didn't know anything about to begin with. And so it's been, I feel like I've gone through a learning process that I think we're all going to have to go through at some point, because this is going to be at the forefront of a broader public discussion that we're going to have over the next, you know, decade, perhaps, in terms of when these techniques are allowed to be used, because they're just so powerful. And so the main difference is, if you think about the way that DNA testing has been used traditionally, I think of it as the kind of law and order DNA test, where you have a sample from a crime scene and then you have a suspect. And if the two samples match, then that's the same person. Genetic genealogy operates by looking for partial matches in really large databases. So if I'm an unidentified victim, they could put my DNA into a huge database of millions of people. And if they find, say, a 1% match, that person might be my fifth cousin. And so from there, they can use traditional genealogy methods to trace the family line of my fifth cousin and eventually trace it all the way back to me to identify who I am. So it's exponentially more powerful in terms of identifying people, identifying suspects as well as victims, because if you think about a lot of the unsolved murder cases in this country's history, a lot of those cases there is DNA evidence from a suspect, but police have just never had a match because the way matches were before, they were looking for 100% match. Now they can rely on finding maybe 1% or 2%, find a cousin, and then use other techniques to find their way back to the source of that DNA. So you can just imagine how powerful this is and how excited a lot of police departments are about this technique. And you can also imagine how a lot of people hear this and get a little bit anxious.
Yeah, because what's so interesting here is it brings up all of these privacy concerns and ethical concerns, because let's say I put my DNA, because I want to do one of those searches that are so popular now that I can find out a little bit more about where I come from and maybe who I'm related to, and I put it into this big database, and maybe I haven't committed a crime, but maybe somebody in my family has, and I am now putting a portion of their genetic information into this database to then be used in this way that you're talking about. So, I mean, how do we think about these privacy concerns and when it's appropriate for law enforcement to have access to these huge databases as more and more people are putting all this information into them?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's sort of endlessly speculative. I mean, any of these scenarios could easily be the premise for a novel. One thing it's important to point out is that at this point, most of the big genealogy databases are not allowing police to use them. So if you're thinking about buying a 23andMe kit or an Ancestry.com kit for your parent for Christmas or something, those databases are not—they resist any sort of police looking through their databases. There are some smaller ones that are open source where people can opt in to do this. So just to put that caveat out there for folks who are listening. But it is a totally new type of property. If you think about it, you know, genetic information, it's simultaneously the most personal thing about us, but it's also shared amongst all of us. And we don't really have a good framework legally, morally to think about that. It's a real challenge. And I think it's one that we're going to start arguing about in legislatures and in courtrooms more and more often.
Jason Moon is a reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio, and he's the host and reporter of its podcast miniseries, Bear Brook, which, by the way, although the limited run series is over, they're continuing to produce updates as they come through and as more information about this case becomes known. It's a really fascinating podcast. I really enjoyed it. Jason Moon, thank you so much for talking with us about it.
Thank you for having me.